This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And now we are officially live here on Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet with Dr. Jeff. You're here with your host, Dr. Jeff Werber, and here for the next 30 minutes on Pet Life Radio. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time. Love doing it. Love asking your questions. Also, we're joining me here on Instagram Live. We have our followers, and I hope that you are getting some really good questions ready as well. I already got some emails very much related to summer stuff. So, of course, I want to hit on those also, but I want to make sure I'm waving to everybody. And hello, hello, hello. And I'm glad you're here, but I'll be even happier if you got some good questions for me. So that's how, you know, it's interesting. Everybody learns from everybody. I say this all the time. When I started doing this media stuff and people are embarrassed to ask questions, don't be embarrassed, because I guarantee that almost every question you have, there are other people that have the same question but are afraid to ask. And there's no such thing as a dumb question, stupid question. Trust me, that I know. If anybody asks dumb questions, it's going to be me. So anyway, one of the things that someone wrote me, and it's pretty hot. This week, we had a pretty hot week. Las Vegas had like something like 5 or 8 straight days of 115 degrees or higher. I mean, that's insane. So people are asking about their dogs. And, you know, what do we do? What kind of summertime precautions? And of course, in heat like that, inside air conditioner is the best. But if you can't, shade essential. Also, adequate water supply. We talked about last week about the Lixit, how to, you know, keep your water bowl if they're in a grassy area. If you have a pool, always observed, always supervised. But a lot of dogs love to swim. It does keep them cool. You can also just take a garden hose and hose them down. So when they start their day in that kind of heat, it's cooling their skin. The new question was, when you have these dogs, what about shaving them down? And this is a very, very important question. And we really, really should think about it. Even, and not only even, especially if you have those Arctic breeds, you have the Samoyed, the Husky, the Malamute, the Akitas have really, really thick, thick coat. Should you shave them down? And the answer is no, because that coat is like a thermos. And what it does, it's going to keep them cool during the hot weather. It keeps them warm during the cold weather. It basically helps regulate their own body temperature, which is 100.5 up to 102.5. It's an insulator. Like I said, it's like a thermos. You put in something hot into a thermos, it stays hot. You put cold, it stays cold. So that is the key. Now, in order for this work, this theory, which is not mine, by the way, it is just well recognized in the veterinary community, there has to be a healthy coat. So that means grooming is still essential, and to brush them regularly, because if you have a lot of mats or the skin itself is really not a healthy skin, then that is going to affect how they deal with this extra heat. So very important to keep it well groomed. Now, what about when you want to give a haircut? So I recommend against shaving down. Now, if you want to do a puppy trim, right, that's fine. A summer cut, they call it also. That could be fine, but don't shave them down to the skin. And the reason for that, especially in this hot weather when it's very sunny, is that dogs can get sunburned. And of course, their skin is so hypersensitive to sun because it's usually covered. In fact, when dogs and cats get skin lesions related to sun, they get them on the snout where the skin is very thin, the hair is very thin. They get it on their ears and cats, and in that area where it's a little, always looks like there's a little balding right in front of the ears in the temporal region, that too. Those are hypersensitive. White cats are more sensitive than dark cats. I mean, it makes so much sense. So when you have dogs that like to lie on their backs, exposing their bellies, their chest and abdomen, especially the abdomen, which has very little hair, those are the areas that are at risk. So could you use sunscreen? Absolutely. You can get like a little kid's, the best kind for dogs really is the spray kind, because you don't want to sit and get them all gooped up with the cream. Though, if you don't have any spray, that and get like SPF 50 or above, like you would use on a little kid. Very important. And if you can keep these dogs on these really, really hot days inside, keep them inside. It's okay. or shade. If they're going to be outside, it's got to have shade and water supply and keep them cool. Now, let's talk about exercising, walking them. Also, very important is keeping an adequate supply of water with you at all times. Don't exercise them, especially heavy exercise, where they're going to be running and exerting themselves in the middle of the day. I mean, that's just common sense. Early morning, late evening, and always have water with you. One trick I've learned years ago is you can take a bandana, wet it down, roll it up, put it in the freezer overnight. In the morning, you put it on their neck and you tie it, and it gives them that coolness, and it just keeps their body temperature a little lower than it's going to get when it gets all hot. Also, the ground is always very hot. Walk barefoot on sand at a beach. You'll know what I mean. Dogs feel that, by the way. Don't think that their pads are any better than our feet. So you want to get booties? You'll see them. And I've had, I had two cases this week alone of burns and calluses on the pads simply because of the hot pavement or sand and doing too much running. And it's like a blister. They blister just like we do. So again, if you're in a situation like that where you know that you're going to be dealing with that kind of behavior, then go ahead for sure and get those little booties. They're really good. Now, one thing about booties, I'm reminding myself of all these things just by talking about them, that dogs' feet sweat. And we've talked about this often, that the only two places where a dog's body sweats are the pads of the feet. And if you hold up a foot to the nose, same tissue. Equine sweat glands. That's where they usually a dog's nose is nice and moist. So they sweat. Now, if you put these booties on that are made out of a non-breathing material like that rubber, it's okay for a walk. But when you get home, you got to take those off. Because what happens is if the feet sweat and it gets like a sweat box inside that little booty, and that's not healthy either. That leads to infection, yeast infection, all sorts of problems. So now look for ones that maybe have their knitted material. They have a Velcro strap and the bottom itself is a little rubber. In fact, those are excellent. You can also get other materials, a mesh, like a nylon mesh with the little rubber bottom. That's excellent. Be really careful on the Velcro, by the way. When you put that Velcro on, it needs to be firm, but not too tight. Because when or if you forget to take them off, or they're going to be outside for a while, that can actually cause some circulatory issues. The foot will swell. Once the foot starts, it's like a vicious cycle. The foot swells, all right? Now that wrap, that Velcro strap that was tight, now inside a swollen foot, around a swollen foot, it's going to be even tighter. The more the foot swells, the tighter it gets. The more tighter it gets, the more the foot's going to swell. And it's disaster. It's absolutely disaster. So you want to keep loosening it and making sure that they have a chance to breathe. Now, having said all that, a mouthful, let's see what kind of hopefully good questions. A lot of waves, guys. I want some questions. Let's see what we got. Jennifer, hello. Cloud Chaser, Hardwick Mom. Bethany, how are you? Ask me a question, Beth. Okay. Oh, I have to send you the picture of that amazing doodle that came into me. Paw protection. Oh, good. Jennifer, I got to you already. Skin emollient. Okay. This is a good one too. So because of these dogs that do get burned, they can dry out. I highly, highly recommend skin emollients. There are some, I used to have a product. I'm going to probably remake it and introduce it in my new line, the Performance by Dr. Jeff. It was skin and coat emollient. It was so fat. Besides the fact, it smelled great. People love putting on their dogs just because it smelled so good. But it's like a moisturizer. I have one that's very similar now. It's a shed control. And these should, by the way, should be sprays. You don't want to start rubbing like a cream all over your dog's bodies. That will be disaster, both from a housekeeping, husbandry standpoint, and also it clogs up the pores. That is, no, you do not want to do that. But a really good skin and coat emollient spray would be something to look. Duxo is another company that has a good one. You want to keep the skin moist because just like we do when it gets really hot or cold, when you look at the extremes, we end up getting dry skin. Dogs as well can get really dry skin. Also, because of allergies, their normal skin protection, their natural protection seems to break down. And therefore, with that skin inflammation. So therefore, these emollients are highly, highly recommended. So I would do that for sure. All right. Diet. Jennifer, more specific, what about diet? As far as if you have an overweight dog, should you make any adjustments on diet? Tell me what you want. We'll talk about it. It's a good point. Everyone with four legs is scratching and biting, all on flea tick mosquito meds, and I don't see any fleas. Are you seeing a lot of this? Okay, so that's a great question. First of all, yes, we are seeing a lot of allergies and we are seeing a lot of fleas too. Now, if your dogs are on flea medication, understand one thing, that these really good medications, the whole way we treat fleas now, because of our understanding has changed, is really different than it was, say, 20 years ago. 20, 30 years ago, we used to say for every adult flea on the dog, there were 40 in the environment. That was our thought. And as with many things in medicine, we were wrong. Adult fleas are obligate parasites. They need that host. So what you see or saw in the carpet were the babies. And there were lots of them. Why? Because during height season, an average female flea will lay 25 to 40 eggs a day. Now, if you have 50 fleas in the environment, each one laying 25 to 40 fleas a day, you can imagine what kind of flea problem you have. So here's what would happen. When they're little, the larva hatch, they become young adults. Now they're looking for a host. They might land on you, but they're going to ultimately find your pet. Once they take that first blood meal, something changes in their little mini flea intestinal tract to now they actually need it. They require it. So that's why they become obligate parasites. They're going to live on the host. Now, let's talk about the new class and newer class of flea products, even the topical Bravecto. They're not repellents. Okay, understand this. They're not repellents. It's not like a flea spray. They require that blood bite, the meal, to kill the flea. So that flea is still going to take a bite. When it deposits its saliva in your dog, then or cat, they're going to get the potential for a flea allergic reaction. That's why they call it FAD, flea allergic dermatitis. So once that flea, however, takes its blood meal on a dog that's been treated, it's going to die. You're not going to see that flea again. Now, you might see three or four more hop on. So when you're seeing a lot of fleas, don't think right away, my flea product's not working. Now, are you using some of the older types of flea products? If you are, they may not be working. I mean, I was worked with Advantage, Canine Advantage for years. Loved it. And it's safe as can be. It's not. It's just that over this much time, it's been 18, 20 years, the fleas have developed resistance. So it's not that the products are bad. They're the same product. What changed was the flea, and they became resistant. So you need to speak with your veterinarian. I do like the isoxazolines. Yes, you're going to read online about the problems with having seizures and stuff. No. First of all, any animal can react to any drug. Just listen to any commercial on TV. They can even die. So, and yet they're selling millions and millions of doses. The FDA has to put everything down. Every bad reaction has to go down. So now, as far as the seizures, it is believed that the dogs that were reacting were already predisposed, already had seizures. And if they did have it on one of the isoxazolines, doesn't mean they're going to have it on all of them. So my recommendation is try one of the others. If you're using NexGard, go try Credelio or Simparica. You're using Bravecto, go NexGard. I mean, just, you know, play around with it. But they are very safe and very effective. So what happens is while that flea is taking a meal, it's going to die, but it still leaves. So you're still going to see some of this allergic reaction. Now, that's the flea problem. What about atopy? Atopy is atopic dermatitis. That's inhaled allergies. Now, one of the benefits we have with dogs, at least not so much with cats, with dogs, is that based on the location of the lesion on the body, you kind of have a clue as to what the offending antigen might be. If it's on the lower back and the rump above the tail, you could see fleas. When I see that area, part of the body affected, I will search that dog. And I'm telling you, I will find a flea 95% of the time. Even though it says, no, we don't have any fleas. Oh, yes, you do. And I can tell because of look where the lesions are. And I'll find them. Now, on the underside, in the inguinal area, the groin, inside thighs, etc., I'm thinking pollens. That's inhaled allergies we call atopy. It's atopic dermatitis. That's from inhaled allergens. If it's on the feet, especially licking a lot of the feet and ears, pretty solely that, I'm thinking food allergy. Now, also, if it's on the underside, but all the underside, including the chest, then I'm also thinking maybe a contact irritant, something around the house that is when the dog lies down on is causing a problem. It could be kapok, it could be cotton, it could be wool, it could be feathers. Dogs are allergic to a lot of things. And another good trick to somewhat get an idea when it comes to allergy is is it seasonal or not? If it's not seasonal, I'm looking for either food or something around the house. If it is seasonal, and depending on where you live, then here in LA, I'm thinking it's going to be some fleas or pollens. And there are also, by the way, to talk to a veterinarian, there are tests that can be done to help determine what the allergies are. But one thing I have to tell you, the allergy testing that we do is not going to help you with foods. So just know food allergy elimination diet is the only thing that's going to really, really work. Very frustrating, very difficult. Most people fail. I think I would fail as well doing that with my dogs. So fortunately, I really never had a dog that has highly food allergic. So there are other ways to do it that might help. We can talk about that another time. Meanwhile, it is almost 20 after the hour. I owe Mark and Pet Life Radio commercial break. So we're going to break for commercial right now, and I'll be back just in a few minutes. Meanwhile, I'll stay on live with Instagram.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So we're back on live here on Pet Life Radio. Great question came in, and I do want to talk about it because it's a really good question. So it is about the atopic dermatitis, fleas, and Cytopoint and Apoquel. First of all, they're made by the same company. They're very, very safe. I really like them a lot. Here is the difference. So you understand if your veterinarian is going to treat with one or the other, or rarely both, how they work and why one sometimes is better than another, and or why one doesn't work well by itself. That's a Cytopoint. And here's how it works. So Cytopoint, the name was CADI, C-A-D-I, canine atopic dermatitis immunotherapy. It is like a vaccine against interleukin 31. So I'll give you a quick rundown. I hope this is not too technical for you, but you'll understand. We knew one thing for years and years and years, that the mediator of the canine allergic response was not histamine. For us, it is. So what do we take when we have an allergic reaction? We take an antihistamine. All antihistamines did for dogs, especially the older ones like diphenhydramine and chlorpheniramine, is they would zonk them out a little bit, which I still like that. And sometimes I will recommend it for that reason, but not for the anti-allergy effect. What we used, because we didn't know what the mediator was, but we knew it wasn't histamine, we for years put dogs on steroids, a broad spectrum, antihistamine, anti-allergy, and they were effective, but obviously with side effects, potentially. We have to respect the drug. We used them cautiously, but they were effective. Along comes Zoetis with the discovery of the interleukin 31, IL-31, released from T helper cells. That is the culprit. That is the histamine in a dog. So we need an anti-interleukin 31. So in comes Cytopoint and Apoquel. Cytopoint is immunotherapy. It actually attacks interleukin 31 as soon as it's released from the T helper cell. So it is negated. It is neutralized. It's effective. The shots work for anywhere from 4 to 6, in some cases, even 8 weeks. And I love it. Now, what about Apoquel? So Apoquel works differently. Apoquel, we found, not we, I had nothing to do with the science, but it has been discovered as that the way the interleukin 31 works, it travels to the skin. And then once it hits to the skin, then that's why most dogs manifest allergies by skin disease. And then with the help of these two enzymes, one is called Janus kinase 1, the other one is Janus kinase 3. We call them JAK1 and JAK3 for short. They help, and they help interleukin 31 do its damage. Without JAK1 and JAK3, interleukin 31 is there, it's released, it travels to the skin, but it can't do anything. In comes Apoquel. Apoquel is a JAK1, JAK3 blocker. So it stops JAK1 and JAK3. Therefore, even though the interleukin 31 released from the T helper cell travels to the skin and looks around for its help to coenzyme JAK1, JAK3, and guess what? They're not there. Apoquil took them out. So that's how they work. The negative of the Apoquil is that it requires, it only has a 20-hour half-life in the system, means it has to be given, well, ideally it would be twice a day. In some tough cases, we do. Once a day is enough, but that's why we started giving it in the evening. So 20 hours after, say, 8 p.m. is 4 in the afternoon the next day. Well, what's happening at 4 in the afternoon? Ah, kids are coming home from school. It's dinner time. There's commotion, et cetera. So that kind of, you're taking your dogs for their afternoon walk. So that kind of occupies their brain a little bit. They're not thinking about scratching. Whereas if it gave it at 8 a.m., then it's going to lose its efficacy by 4 a.m. the next day. What are you and your dogs doing at 4 a.m. usually? You're sleeping. You can't stop the dog. You're not distracting them. So they're going to start scratching away. So we decided we start it giving twice a day, anywhere 7 to 10 days, depending on how bad. And then we go to once a day in the evening. Now, there are some cases where that also rely on JAK1, JAK3, but there are other inflammatory mediators, not just IL-31, other interleukins and other. Therefore, the side point for those is worthless. So it's for interleukin 31, it's the best. If there are others that use JAK1, JAK3, then you're going to need the Apoquil. So it's one or the other. And in really, really bad cases, it's both. But I will tell you that they are great. I have not heard of any negatives. They're not harmful. And it's like a great immunotherapy or a medication that's going to help stop the allergy and very effective. Now, let me add one more thing. Boy, am I confusing you today or what? So what is the number one, right, complicator of canine allergy? And, well, you wouldn't know. Skin infection. So what happens is these dogs and cats that have highly allergic skin disease and they're scratching, they're breaking up that protective layer of the skin and skin bacteria, and usually is, by the way, the offending agent is Staph pseudoepidermidis, which is a normal bacteria living on skin, but it doesn't cause a problem. But break that protective barrier through inflammation, i.e. allergy or scratching, and that skin, that bacteria becomes an opportunist. So now we have secondary skin infection. If you treat the allergy, but not the secondary skin infection, they're going to still scratch. And you're going to say, God, doc, that stuff didn't work. I spent all this money. It didn't work. No, it's fine. You still got to treat the secondary infection. So when there are lesions, when you see sores on the skin, which you're going to see in really bad cases, those dogs need to be bathed maybe once a week, be put on antibiotics. And it's very important to look at the entire dog, not just the one thing. Summer gear, we talk rotational feeding. So it's a great question. It really depends on your pets. Dog, cats, you know, are finicky. My cats give them a bunch of different flavors of the same brand, because I want to stick with the same brand, but they do well as far as their canned food. I like a mixed feeding, especially for cats, because cats don't drink enough water. And even one of my cats is not a big fan of canned food. He still eats it. It's better than nothing. He's not a big water drinker. One of my other cats is a fantastic water drinker. So he doesn't eat any of the canned food, but he likes it. Like dogs, I pretty much also, I stick with some different flavors, but the dry food I give them is exactly the same. Dogs, I don't know. I find that they are less discerning. My Labrador will eat anything. He's the kind of dog that eats first and asks questions later. My other ones, sometimes I have to entice them a little bit, throw a little crumbled up treat on their food, but they all eat. It really depends on the dog. From a nutritional standpoint, if you're feeding something balanced and your pet is doing well, I don't think you need to search for other things. But if you notice for whatever reason that you want to do some rotational feeding and try different things, I'm not against it at all. It all depends on the dog. It's very individualized. Does the dog's diet affect their health allergies? If so, what do you recommend? Well, the answer for that, of course, is if they are allergic to something in that diet, it's 100% going to affect their allergies. As far as the byproducts, you know, that's a great question more for a nutritionist. That's a great point, Jennifer. I work with a few nutritionists. See if I can get one to maybe join us on the show. These would be great questions to what, I don't mean necessarily, you know, one of these naturopaths self-proclaimed. We have plenty of those in the world. I'm talking about a board certified veterinary nutritionist who can shed some light on a lot of things that we do, feed our animals, et cetera. There is a MASH here in Hollywood does have a board certified nutritionist on staff. I'm going to give her a holler. Maybe she'll join us one Sunday and we can go through some of these questions. So as far as, you know, I would avoid preservatives. If you want to keep it natural, that's fine. If you want to keep it raw, I do have an opinion there because I had my Optimum, which was a raw diet, either freeze dried or HPP. HPP is high pressure pasteurization. Either of those, I think should be, or both. When I had my Optimum, we actually did both. We did HPP and freeze dried. Do you need both? No, but you need something that is going to kill the big four bacteria that we see in raw diets: Campylobacter, E. coli, Listeria, and Salmonella. If we can keep those four away from our dogs, in fact, interestingly, I am working right now with a patient, and a virtual patient. It's a woman that I know, and she called me. She lives far away, but she called me and having problems with a pup. And her pup eats, they do feed it some raw food. And diarrhea like crazy. Her vets tried all sorts of things and, you know, anti-diarrheals, nothing was really helping. So when she gave me the history of the raw, I said, you know what? I'm not a big fan of untreated raw foods because of these bacteria. It sounds like the fact that nothing has worked and the fact that the dog was not put on antibiotics, not even metronidazole flagyl, and put on a fiber or and a probiotic to sort of neutralize the gut flora, the gut balance. So we did all that. I called the prescriptions in on Friday. She wrote me last night and she sent me a morning's picture this morning, Sunday morning, of the poop, and it is darn near normal in 2 days. So I can't stress enough that if you're going to feed raw, which I, again, I'm a fan, but you want to make sure that the dogs are protected. All right, Steve, I take my dog to work and clients give him those milk bones as treats all day. Well, yes. First of all, carrots. Perfect. Love carrots. Love cut up apple. Some sort of vegetable is great. Obviously not grapes. Obviously not raisins, but carrots are great. Now, just so you know, and I have nothing against the brand milk bones, but if you take, I don't know what size dog you know you have, but if you take the large size milk bone, 7 of them, a big dog, enough calories for the entire day. That means if you're feeding your dog regularly, 2 meals a day with all their adequate calories, and you give them, say, 3 milk bones a day, you're increasing their daily ration by about 50%. So look, these are great. And one thing I always say about when it comes to treats is that dogs don't appreciate the volume of the treat they are being offered. They appreciate the act of getting a treat. And we usually, what do we couple the treat with? Oh, good boy, good girl. Yeah, great. So when you're going to give that treat, take it just a corner of it and give it to them. They're going to sit, they're going to give their paw, they're going to love the good boy. They're going to be just as happy. And they're not going to get them fat. So keep that in mind. So I recommend topical or treat from a flea and tip. All right. As far as the topical, I really don't care. I think logistically, the treat is better. You know it's getting in there with the topical. And the only one of the four isoxazolines is Bravecto that offers a topical. And yes, you just got to be careful after you put it on. You can't pet them. They can't get wet for, you know, maybe an hour or two. If you have little kids, it might be a little more of a challenge. But once the stuff gets absorbed, it's fine. Now, if you have a dog that refuses to eat the treat or a dog that is so nasty you can't get near his face to put the treat in, then go with the topical, 100%. By a 1-year-old, 38-pound female who doesn't seem to have gotten her first heat. So that's a really, really interesting question. So first of all, it says about a year. Of my colleagues, a friend of mine, actually, I've known her since our days at Berkeley. She would walk around campus with her 2 yellow labs. I'd walk around campus with my big black lab. And she ended up 2 years of my going into my third year of vet school. I see her at the vet school campus. I had no idea she was pre-vet. Anyway, so Autumn Davidson, she's great. And she is now a specialist in reproduction. And I have called her on once a few such cases. We used to say that many dogs have a silent first heat. She disagrees. She thinks they just have a late heat. A heat is a heat is a heat. You may not go tons of spotting, but you're going to see swelling. You're going to see the behavior. If you don't see that, it's not a silent heat. It just hasn't been, she hasn't had heat yet. So if we're pretty sure that she never had anything that resembles an estrus, meaning a swollen vulva, et cetera, then I would spay her before 14 months. Because if, in fact, she did have a heat and it was just missed because it was a light one, then her second heat's going to come, which usually happens at 7 months of age. The next one is at 7 months later, 14 months of age. We don't want them to have the second heat. So I would hang in there if she's 12, at least, or about a year. I mean, that's important to know. Do we have maybe an extra several weeks If I would wait by 13 months, if she hasn't had her estrus, then I would probably recommend spaying her. And again, at a 38-pound dog, it's a smaller breed. I'm not so much worried about bone cancer, and which was one of the reasons why we like to kind of hold off until and let them have one heat. So I would do to be safe. All right. And insects that are you seeing, a lot of us should be aware of that are dangerous. Well, the only insects that I hate bees. I'm not a bee guy. So fleas are probably the biggest nuisance. Ticks are a big, big nuisance. Ticks, interestingly, back in the day, certain fleas, the rat flea carried the plague, but fleas carry tapeworms. Tapeworms are more of an aesthetic problem, where ticks carry a lot of diseases from, depending on where you live, Lyme, for one, Ehrlichia, Babesia. So they are more significant when it comes to diseases. So I would use these for control ticks. If you have tick population, you want to make sure you get the ticks off if you can. Give them a flea and tick bath. If you see a lot of ticks and you came back from a hike and you see ticks all over the place, then I'd be more proactive when it comes to ticks. NexGard Plus, great, love it. NexGard Plus, by the way, is flea, tick, heartworm, and intestinal parasites. Does cats retain most of the water in their body from wet food? Yeah, no, they do. I think that it's very important. Cats, just in general, don't drink as much as they should. So yes, whatever you can do. All right, I think we got to go. It is time. Do you use rehydrated raw or frozen raw? Either way, pumpkin, Jennifer, also, yes, a good treat. And it's also good for, it's a good source of fiber. Loose stool solidifies it there because that's going to lose them. Yeah, Greek yogurt, also good. That because you're getting a lot of the bacteria, the probiotics. All right, good. Carrots, celery, peeled apples are treats. Perfect. Yes, Hardwick mom, you're right on, right on. I love it. Okay, good. A lot of joints today. Thank you so much, guys, for joining me here on Instagram Live, here on Pet Life Radio. Thank you, Mark, for putting up with me going over again. But you know, when I get all these good questions, it's, you know, you got to talk about them. So why not? Anyway, same time next week here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram Live. Love the show. I hope you guys do too. And if you have any questions during the week, feel free to reach out to me here, either Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com or to Werbs_DVM. You can find me just by putting in Jeff Werber on Instagram too. I tried it out. I come up either way. And have a wonderful week. Unsweetened applesauce, fine. Great source of fiber too. And I even like it. I always have that in the house just because of that. All right. Have a good week, everybody. Take care.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.